just brings back special memories. First of all, you know, he's a special horse, trained by a special man in Chug and owned by Mr. Phibbs. We had Sunday Silence, trained by the Eagle, Mr. Whittingham, just a tremendous trainer, owned by Arthur Hancock. And there was just so much rivalry at the time, West Coast versus East Coast. And it just brings back how racing was, how racing should be. Great breeders, great trainers, and, you know, deciding everything on the racetrack.
Do you remember the first time that you actually sat aboard Easy Goer?
Oh, I do, yes. It was actually at Gulfstream when he came in initially. He had come down from Camden, and he was kind of beautiful colt, number one. He was very heavy set. We knew at the time that he wouldn't, you know, probably run till the summer or late fall at the time. But never knew, or never, with his pedigree, you'd always hope that he'd become the horse he did. But at the time, he just looked like a nice, well-bred horse, and hopefully would turn out to be a good horse, which he actually did.
Yeah, very good horse. I tell the story a lot that he's the horse that I credit for getting me hooked on the sport of racing. I went to the Traverse in 1989, sat at the picnic tables at the top of the stretch, and had a $2 across-the-board ticket on Easy Goer. I remember he was a heavy favorite. He won so easily that day, and I just fell in love with him. He was my first horse crush, if you want to look at it like that.
No, he had that effect on people and anyone that was around him, but he just had this charisma about him. And look, at he was he's just a terrific horse. And I kind of spent over 2 years with him every single day, riding him, traveling with him. And he was a huge part of my life, and he is to this day.
For those of us who have never had the privilege to be aboard a horse, and a horse the caliber of Easy Goer at that, describe what it's like to sit aboard a really good horse and to work or to gallop a really good horse like that.
They're just completely different, Mike, just from your average horse. From just sitting on them, how to carry themselves, how to move, the power, how easy to do things. And special horses know they're special too, and they just have that charisma about them, how to walk around the barn, how to carry themselves, how that look in their eye. And it's just like getting into a Ferrari, really. You can feel the power, and it's just different. And sometimes it's very hard to articulate exactly how it feels. But when you get up, you don't get that feeling very often. But when you do, it's very, very special.
You were aboard him early in his three-year-old season, and there was a work at Gulfstream Park that Shug thought was a little faster than it should have been. And I think Easy Goer made it look very, very easy. He wasn't too happy with you after that workout, if I recall. What do you remember about that and what you said to him?
The breeze you're referring to was actually the final breeze for the Kentucky Derby. Yes, and we were the breeze a half mile. Mr. Phibbs, Pat, and Shug went over to the front side. I was told to go 48, 49, and that's what I did. But there was a horse about three off the rail, Monty Graves, who's now the pony girl for us at Churchill. But as soon as I got to the 3-8 pole, her horse kind of accelerated with her. So we kind of worked in tandem all the way around. I didn't think anything of it. My horse worked beautiful. Didn't bother me at all. But it obviously bothered Chug, because it was his final breeze. He didn't want any mishaps to happen. But it's just one of those things that you know, I couldn't stop and start all over again, but I worked the time I was supposed to work, and, you know, the horse came out of the breeze beautifully, and but there was a lot of pressure on Chug, and I can understand why he acted the way he did.
Yeah, and it's a situation where the horse just did everything so easily that maybe he could kind of fool some people at times, couldn't he?
Oh, yeah, and good horses will go faster than you actually think they're going. In this particular case, I knew him so well by then. I always got my times pretty right with him, and because I'd always go a little bit slower than I felt he should be going, just because I knew he was doing good times. But, no, he worked beautifully that morning. But, you know, unlike these days where you have an 8:30 to 8:45 break for the Belmont or for the Derby and Oaks horses, he didn't have that at the time, so the track would rather get busy.
As somebody that was so close to Easy Goer, you mentioned spending all that time with him, being aboard him every morning like that. Take me through your emotions and what you remember about those three races throughout the Triple Crown.
Well, it's my first real experience with the Kentucky Derby. I had Seeking the Gold the year before. I got to ride him, and he ran against the Winning Colors and ran a nice race that year. But this was the first time over the winter we knew we had a special horse in our hands, and we got beaten in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile by Is It True on an off track, and but all winter his preparation went really, really well. The Gotham was a special race. The Wood Memorial was a very good race, but I still believe he holds the record for the mile, 1:32.2 for the Gotham. But there's such build-up at the time going for the Derby for Mr. Phibbs, you know, the Hancocks, and it was just a lot of pressure, a lot of stress, but it was just a magical time as well. And each day was, as we got closer, the pressure built for that. But going into the Derby, we went in there with an awful lot of confidence. His wood race is very good. We shipped in. He trained really well. Sun in the Silence came from the West Coast after the Santa Anita Derby. We thought he had what we felt was a pretty hard race in that race, Pathfinder's Willem. So, you know, we were going in there with a lot of confidence, and rightfully so. And believing went off the favourite. But unfortunately, we had an off track at the time. We had two horses in that race, and never really travelled in the race. He never travelled with any kind of confidence at all. Never seemed to get a hold of it. And never really at any time did we think he was going to win the Derby. But it was just his class and courage that got him to finish second. So that was very disappointing. So we came out of that race. He came out of the race well. Went back to Belmont just for the week. He left Belmont on the Sunday prior to the Preakness, so I travelled down in the van with him. Spent that week with him, and each day he got better as well. He came out of that race really good. We were very confident going into the Preakness, and that was one of the best races I've ever been a part of, seen. But it was heartbreaking at the same time. And Pat Day, who is one of the greatest riders of all time and one of the greatest people of all time, and he will tell you this himself, that if he was to ride a race again or take one ride back, that would be the race he would take back, because I felt we had the best horse on the day. So now we're after coming off two disappointing defeats. Felt like we hadn't shown the world how good this horse really was. A lot of press media, obviously, a lot of huge build-up. Now we go back to Belmont. Sun the Silence is coming to our home turf. He's going for the Triple Crown. And easy goal. As soon as he got back to Belmont, that was back home for him. Big Sandy, he loved the track. And he just trained phenomenally. He just really just blossomed. He just had that air about him. We grew more confident as well. Shug was never lost. And Shug, to this day, it's one of the things I admire him about, never lost confidence in the horse, never lost confidence in himself and how he was getting this horse prepared. And just the last week going into the Belmont, we all felt like, no one ever actually just said it, but we all felt like, yeah, this is going to be our day. And on the walk over with the Belmont, you know, Shug, he's a man of few words, but he walked over and he just said to us, I think we're going to see something special today. And boy, we did.
Yeah, we certainly did. What was the feeling? You mentioned him blossoming when he got to Belmont Park and got back home. What was the feeling you had underneath you in those 3 weeks between the Preakness and the Belmont that was maybe a little bit different?
Oh, he was getting stronger, he was getting sharper, he was getting more, a little tougher to gallop. All of those signs were like, wow, this horse is really sharpened up, he's getting stronger, he's putting more into what he's doing. And you could just tell he was a big horse, so not saying he wasn't fit for the Preakness or Derby, he certainly was. But you could just tell that he was coming into his own, and he was just, he was breeding different there at the time.
Yeah, you mentioned that heartbreaking defeats in the Derby and in the Preakness and the disappointment there. When you come back home to the Belmont and you're trying to deny Sunday Silence the Triple Crown, what was the mentality and the mindset from your perspective? Was it was it, geez, I have to find a way to get past this? Or was it more like a Rocky Balboa type thing? I'm going to train. I'm going to do everything with this horse. We're going to get locked in and we're going to take care of business here when he comes to our house.
It was, we want, you know, when you have a horse of this magnitude, you feel a responsibility to the horse and obviously to the owners, but you feel a responsibility to the horse to show the world how good we all felt. We all knew he was. So there was no stone left unturned for him. But we just trained him the way he would normally. He didn't change anything. The horse was actually doing it by himself. You know, he was just getting bigger, getting stronger, getting sharper. And we didn't go in there. At least my mindset wasn't, I need to beat Son of Silence. It wasn't that at all, which obviously we did. We're going to deny him the Triple Crown. But it was just for the horse himself. We wanted the horse to win, to show for him. He deserved to win it, and we wanted it for him. And that was the greatest thing about the race. Shug never once said, we've got to beat him. No, obviously, you have to beat him to win it. But it was all about the horse. And he just wanted the horse. He wanted this classic for the horse. And it just meant so much. And we were so proud of the horse. I mean, it was unbelievable. Mr. Winningham, you couldn't ask for a nicer man to be around. After the Derby, I always remember him coming over to see us. We were in the tack room, Shug and Tony Reinstadler. And he just knocked on the door and he came in and he just congratulated us on our horse. He just said, you know, his horse is a very, very good horse. But just congratulating on us, wishes the best for the Preakness. Just a class man, absolutely class man. And that was going on at the time. It was just a great rivalry, but it was done with class. And it was all about just getting your horse to perform the best on the day. Two tremendous trainers, two great owners, and two great horses. And that's what racing's all about. And it's just very, very special.
You know, it's funny the way life works sometimes too, David. 30 years later, you're now working for another really good man in Mark Cassey. You have another really good horse in War of Will who's going to try and win the Belmont after winning the Preakness, which Easy Goer wasn't able to do. Look back on where you are now and what this means to you going into the Belmont Stakes.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I've had a lot of time to reflect. You know, life throws different things at you. I was so lucky and blessed to work for Shug for 6 years. He's a great man to work for. He's a different man. But I learned so much from him, and he gave me a great opportunity to ride some wonderful horses, you know, and Rhythm, Personal Flag, and Mining, and Seeking the Gold, and obviously Easy Goer. And I just got to be around, you know, the Fibs, to see what a class act they are. So when I left him to go on my own, and you know, I got to train for 23, 24 years, had some great years. You know, you make great connections when you work for people like that. And I learned so much. And, you know, when I was forced basically to give up training, I had a wonderful opportunity to go work for Mark. And I can't tell you what a class man he is. He's unbelievable to work for. He's so good to me and my family. I'm in a great position right now. And lo and behold, you know, we have War of Will, and he's just another great horse to be around, another great owner, Mr. Barber, and it's just unbelievable, really, Mike, and I've been so lucky, and I think, like, life, it's how you rebound, you know, from adversity, it's how you carry yourself, and I never had time to feel sorry for myself. I was raising two kids, married, trying to make a family. So that's the wonderful thing about this business. You just throw yourself into it. You immerse yourself into it. And, you know, and having the opportunity to go work for Mark allowed me to kind of get back in the game again at the top level, be around top level horses, top level owners. And I can't tell you how good Mark is.
You know, you've had a lot of success on your own when you were training too, David. Names like Dennis Accourt come to mind, for example, right? Third in the Kentucky Derby, second in the Belmont Stakes. So you had some Triple Crown luck of your own there. Was it difficult to just say, you know what, I'm going to leave all this behind and I'm going to go work for somebody else?
Oh, it was extremely difficult, Mike, yeah. I mean, if I didn't have a family, I'd probably still be, you know, struggling on. But sometimes things happen for a reason. When I lost my biggest client after Saratoga, I just couldn't rebound from that. But these, when I look back, it's probably one of the best things ever to happen to me, because otherwise I would have continued to struggle just with so-so horses. I wasn't getting the horses that I felt like maybe I should have been getting, but you can only train the horses you have, not the horses you hope to have. But financially, Mike, it was getting so difficult. I found myself coming to work not enthusiastic. It was just stressful, and that's not. I love training. I just love to train. I love developing horses, and the stress was taking everything away from what I loved about training, the payroll, the workman's comp, the feed man, the tack man, the payroll. I mean, it just goes on and on. It's an unbelievable job to have, and a responsibility to have. And then going to work for Mark, allowed me to get back to what I love to do, and that is train. And he gives me a lot of rope, you know, to leeway to train. You know, we have great communication. He knows everything that's going on, but he allows you to use your horsemanship, and that's what I love.
That wasn't him. He just sent the voicemail, was it?
No, that was shaky.
after War of Will wins the Preakness, in his post-race press conference, Mark was very complimentary of you. He said the one person that is not here, and he was very disappointed that you weren't there. He said the one person that's not here is the person that deserves a lot of credit for getting this horse ready. And he praised you quite profusely after the Preakness Stakes. What's it mean, considering everything you've been through and where you are today, what's it mean to hear him say that?
It means I made the right decision to work for Mark. Seriously, that's the man he is. And it's not just me he gives credit to. He gives the credit to the whole team. We're just lucky. This horse came in last year, Jamie Begg, who had him at Belmont. He absolutely loved the horse. He told Mark that we've got a special horse here. And that's, you know, and then the horse ended up going to Woodbine. So the horse is all, you know, the horse has always been held in such high esteem. But Mark, no, I mean, he loves... He takes, when things are going bad, or if I'm going through a bad run with my division, he says, don't worry, we're doing good elsewhere, your turn will come. So he's always picking your head up, and he's always making you feel good about yourself. And he never gets down on you. And if he has something to say, he says it, and you move on. We have a discussion about a horse's program, and we discuss it, and we move on. And that's the beauty of it. There's a lot of... You're involved the whole time. You feel like you got a lot of input in, and not just a 9-to-5 job, because God knows we know it's not that. But it's just, he allows you to give you his input, because I see these horses every day. And not just me, whether it's Jamie Begg, whether it's Alan Hardy, whether it's Nick Tomlinson, whoever's in charge of that division. And that's the beauty, because we all feel involved and we all want to do so good. And because my biggest fear of working with Mark is disappointing him. I never want to disappoint him. Am I going to make bad decisions? Of course I am. We all do. But it's from me wanting to learn from every situation. But the last thing, that'd be the biggest thing that would hurt me if I felt like I was disappointing him. And I never want to do that.
You've made an awful lot of good decisions too, David, including the decisions and the moves you made with War of Will, bringing him back after everything that went wrong in the Louisiana Derby, getting him ready. And I know you and Mark work very closely together to do that. War of Will, I asked you what goes through your mind when you hear the name Easy Goer. What goes through your mind when you hear the name War of Will?
Special. Absolutely special, Mike. I can't emphasize it enough. We were a little bit disappointed last fall with the Bourbon, and we thought maybe with a little better ride, he could have won that. The Breeders' Cup, it wasn't beaten far, but it was a terrible turf course. And anyone that was around the horse at the time and that had the horse, we knew he was special. We just said, how are we going to get the best out of him? We always loved the way he breathes on the dirt, but, you know, he's bred for turf. And so sometimes things happen for a reason. And if he was to have won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile or won, we'd be continuing down the turf path. But we got an opportunity to run him and his maiden at the end of November last year. And I was on and off track, but my God, he won for fun. And here we are. We said, okay, let's point towards the Derby. And he's taking us all away, and he's still taking us. And what happened in the Louisiana Derby was so disappointing, because to this day we're still not quite sure what happened or why it happened. It did take us a little while to get him back on track after that. Once he got a full evaluation, we got a clean bill of health to start him back. It still took a while, and you know, Mark and I, Mr. Barry, we sat down and mapped out a program for him to get him back. But, and this is the beauty of the program, that if Mark says he ever has one bad day, or we're not happy with him, we're not going for the Derby. The Derby is not the be-all and end-all. We want to get the best out of this horse. And he just continued to get better and better every day. And that's the... I can't emphasize how wonderful that is to... The horse comes first and foremost. Yes, sure, the Derby is a special race, or the Preakness, but we can't go there without the horse. The horse has to take us. And I'm so proud of the job we all did with him, getting him ready for the Derby, because I think it was plain to see that he was getting ready to run the race of his life, and was getting to a position to run the race of his life. And because of the incident, you know, that was compromised. And as a result, a lot of people had a lot to say about it one way or another. But here's another example of Mr. Barber and Mark and how they handled themselves through all of that, handled themselves with class and dignity. Did not want to take anything away from the horse. And so we got him ready for the Preakness. And it was so, we're just so happy for the horse. Once again, it was about the horse, because now, yes, this is the horse we all seen, this is the horse we all talk about, we've all bragged about him, and for him to come back and win the Classic was just so special. And you know, I've been special to be around some great people and some great horses, Mike, and this is a great game. It's the game of sport, and you know, it's kings.
Yeah, it certainly is. What have you seen from War of Will the past 3 weeks since the Preakness?
You could definitely tell that the Preakness had taken something out of him as regards conditioning, as regards, you know, weight loss. When he came back, he had lightened up. But rightfully so, he hadn't run for 6 weeks, ran a hard race on a very, very bad track in the Kentucky Derby. That always takes something out of you. Then come back in 2 weeks and travel, and, you know, close to a fast pace in the Preakness, won that decisively. And so that's definitely going to take its toll. It took him a good week, 10 days, just to kind of get his energy back, put some weight back on. He put on about 40, 50 pounds, which, you know, you're never going to get back to the weight you had before the Derby. That's going to take considerably longer. But his energy level, his coat, and his gallops were starting to get a little bit stronger. And we could just tell that he was coming back to himself. You know, we're having an extra week to work for the Belmont, and is the 3 weeks going to be enough? Well, we'll find out on Saturday. But whatever happens on Saturday, he's still a very special horse.
Good luck on Saturday, David. Go get it done.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you very much.